you travel around a lot, still it's important to do that so that people can see you face to face and get some of the energy from actually being here. It's really weird, I've noticed over those many years I've been a monk. Some places they do have energy, some people have energy. Good energy, sometimes bad energy. Which is sometimes why if somebody comes into the room and they got bad energy, you can feel. There's nothing to do with this monk, by the way. But sometimes people got bad energy and you feel up a little bit on edge. Maybe your boss or Donald Trump or someone comes in. I remember one of the monks I used to know over in Malaysia, a monk called Agachitta. He said that one day he was at a person's house for dana, for the lunch dana, and someone came into the room and he had such a bad feeling about this fellow. Really felt so uncomfortable in this fellow's presence. You know who that man was? He was a public executioner of Malaysia. Ooh, that's a very dangerous fellow. He was the one who actually, you know, when Malaysia used to hang people, he would actually pull the lever. So you can see just a bad energy around such a person. And of course, you can see the bad energy around me too, because no one ever comes close anymore. There must be some terrible energy around me. So come closer, for goodness sake. Gives people around the back a chance to come in. Very good. Not that close. Very good. So sometimes it's nice to have good friends, good energy. Because it is true that what the Buddha said, associating with good people, kind people, virtuous people, is a great blessing. There's one of the wonderful things why we have these New Year's Eve parties. Yeah, you can go to other parties where people do stupid things, you don't really know what they're up to. Very good. Yes. Very good. A cup of tea. Excellent. And Happy New Year to you. Blessings. So anyway, so that when you do associate with good people, that's one of the things we try to make sure that we encourage in this place, so people can meet meet one another, good people. For those of you who weren't in the little quiz which I ran just half an hour ago, we come from different countries. Yeah, we may be different genders, different ages, different shapes and sizes. But I did ask the question, if those of you weren't at the little quiz, that what percentage of monks at Bodhinyana are Asian? How many Asians do we have, Asian monks do we have at Bodhinyana Monastery? And somebody was smart enough to get the correct answer, it was 100%. All Asians in this temple. Some are South Asians, some are Southeast Asians, some are East Asians, some are Australasians, some are Caucasians. Eurasians. So that's a nice little way of looking at it, because it doesn't really matter when people come together, they meet one another, they befriend one another, look after one another, care for one another, help one another. That's a beautiful part of our life. And so that's one of the things which, yeah, we can talk about all these great teachings of Buddhism. Yeah, we can meditate and sit quietly for half an hour or 1 hour. But it's also important to practice what we teach, we preach. In other words, we talk about friendliness and we are friendly towards one another. And that's what the Buddha said, Kalyana Mitta, good friends, is one of the most important parts of the holy life. Indeed, the Buddha said 100% all the holy life is all about having good friendships. So in the spiritual life, which we teach here, friendship, working together, making these contacts is very, very, very helpful. And of course it's really helpful to me that I make lots of friends, many people get to know me, because that helps many times. Such as even this time, coming off the aircraft at Perth Airport on Friday, many of the ground staff knew me. So Ajahn-Pa, welcome. Thank you for coming back. And sometimes the people who work on the customs, they say, Ajahn-Pa, you're giving the talk 5 nights? I said, yeah, I will be there. So do they check my bags? No, you walk straight through. This is what happens when, you know people and you've got good reputation. The Kalyana Mitta principle. And still I recall, even when my nephew came to see me many years ago, he came to see me, you know what he calls me? And I'm a monk, and he's my brother's son, he calls me Monkle. So he came to see his Monkle here in Perth, he went to Vietnam, first of all, backpacking, a nice young man, but he didn't really know how it happened, but he had a bullet cartridge in his backpack. Not a live bullet, but the cartridge. And that turned up on the customs in Singapore, in Changi Airport. That was big trouble. So when it saw it on the X-ray, they asked him to come into the private room. And they sat him down and interrogated him. Where did you get this bullet? I don't know, he said. I was backpacking in Vietnam. I don't know how it got in there. Where are you going, sir? Well, I'm going to see my Monkle. He's a monk over in Perth. And the person interrogating him said, does your uncle know a monk called Ajahn Brahm? He said, I am. He's my uncle. Ajahn Brahm's my uncle. Oh, really? I go to all his talks. Please, sir, go through. And I got him out of big trouble. So, it is nice having your friends, people who look after you, who care for you, and even in other little ways. I often told that story, which is a very powerful story. There's a few things. Somebody just asked me a few minutes ago, where do you get your stories from? Do you actually invent them, or do you read them? A lot of them are stories from your life. Now, what happens? And that particular story was of this young Sri Lankan boy. I shouldn't really say who he is, but his parents were really strong supporters of our monastery. They're getting old now. Oh, no, sorry, I shouldn't say that in case they're listening. They're getting mature in their years. But anyway, he would come here and just bring dana and even come to the Dharma school, play around. But then, he was a very smart kid. He did well at year 12, went to UWA, became a doctor, and after 1 year as a doctor, that was the story where he came to see me in the community hall over there where we had the quiz. He came to see me after lunch and said, I really have to talk with you. I'm going to resign from being a doctor. I can't do the job any longer, he said. And that surprised me because, I'd known him for such a long time. He had to work really hard to qualify as a doctor. And then he wanted to resign, and that's when I asked him, why? And he said that morning, one of his patients had died tragically. She was about 23 or something, and that never expected her to pass away. And he had to go and tell the husband. Unexpectedly, the woman he still loved very much, that had only been married for a few years, was no more. And worse, his two young children had no mummy. And it was devastating, that shock of not even expecting, not being prepared that his wife was going to die. And suddenly, this young man, who was one of my students, had to go and break the news to them. And he said, he was a compassionate, sensitive young man. And he said, I just cannot face the possibility of having to do that again. That hurt me so much. I feel such a failure. I've let down these people big time. I'm going to have to find another job. That's what he said. And that's when I taught him that the job of a doctor is not to cure people. If you think you have to cure people to be a successful doctor, you're going to fail many, many times. And you have to go through this tragedy many, many times. That's not your job, to cure people. Your job is to care for them. And if you care for them, you'll never need to fail. Even if it's a disease or an accident, an injury which cannot be remedied, you can always care. He got it straight away. He went back to work, realizing the most important thing to do as a doctor is to care, much more than to cure. So you can't cure people and tell them to turn off their mobile phones. You just have to care for them. That's just what happens sometimes. But as a result of that, you know, it changed his whole idea of what it was to be a doctor. And you know, he's done really, really well caring for people instead of curing them. And actually, he actually cures more people that way by putting caring as a priority rather than curing. And this is what happens when you have good friends, then when people like me need them, they're there for you. So what happened with him just last year, one of our monks, he had diarrhea. And you've got to look after monks, because some monks, they were just, doesn't matter, I can endure this. It doesn't matter, if you die, you die. We're tough people. And just even earlier, just you know, some monks, especially in Thailand, there was one monk I knew over there, and you know, he had a fungus growing on his private parts. And you know what he did? He couldn't get any medicine for it, so he decided to actually use chili powder. And I know that as a fact because we had to go to his monastery, and when we saw him dancing around. Monks aren't really allowed to dance, but he couldn't help it. That's stupid. But you know, they didn't have anything else to use. It worked. But I wouldn't recommend that. But anyway, so this poor monk, he had this bad diarrhea, and then when we found out the blood was coming out as well, ooh, big danger. Might be bowel cancer. So the doctor said, we're going to get you an appointment to get a test as soon as possible. And I always get this wrong. It's not an endoscopy, isn't it? It was a something scopy. They put it up your backside. Colonoscopy. Okay. I know telescope, periscope, colonoscope. Okay. So anyway, he shoved it up his backside. But the person who did this, you know, he said, well, there's a long waiting list, and the doctor was really wanting the GP get it as soon as possible, because if it's bowel cancer, that can kill you very quickly. Had all the symptoms of it. So we decided, you know, monastery, you know, what are the donations for to look after the monks? So we decided to get private. What's a good private doctor? Should cost a lot of money. We found one in South Perth. Very good private doctor. He was my student, the one I told how to care, not to cure. So as soon as he saw one of my monks, that was it. No fees. All for free. It wasn't for free, it was just caring and sharing, looking after one another. I love that idea that you look after me, I'll look after you. We look after one another, we care and we network and we look after one another. It's a wonderful thing, we can actually do things like that. So that's one of the great things of having a community, when we can share and look after one another, care for one another. So you've got a big family here. And they're family which don't come from your home country, they don't come from even the same gender as yours, but we always work together, look after one another, make sure that everybody is well cared for and supported, even if you're lonely or things go wrong. That's one of the great things about a community, and the kindness. And I can't resist saying one of my most favorite stories. This one I was told by somebody, really wonderful story about kindness. That there was a woman over in, I think, United States, somewhere, New York, and she had a really, really bad cancer. And many people tried to help her and cure her, but nothing was working. And so that the oncologists were just passing the herd from one person to another person until it came to the desk of one very well-known and experienced oncologist in one of the New York hospitals. And he looked at the case, which everybody else had said was untreatable. He looked at it, read it through, and said, I'm going to take this lady on. And he gave everything he knew to try and get this woman in remission. He called in favors from some of his friends throughout the whole of the United States. Anything was not too much problem, too much trouble for this doctor trying to cure this woman with very, very bad cancer. He put so much effort and time into her that it actually bore good fruit. She actually recovered. And he could tell her that she was in remission and she'd probably live healthily happy for many more years. But of course, this was in the United States, where everything is private and extremely expensive. So when she got the bill from the hospital, she was terrified to open it. Those bills are sometimes many hundreds of thousands of dollars. Many people have to sell their houses to be able to pay for such treatment. But how much is your life worth? So she gritted her teeth and opened the letter. And what she saw as the bill just shocked her. But in order to understand what was written on the bill, you have to go back 20, 30 years earlier, when the woman with cancer was a young woman living in a small apartment in New York. And when one afternoon, a young medical student knocked on her door. He was selling things door to door just to make some money to pay for his expenses at medical school. And so he was selling all sorts of stuff. And so the woman again said, no thank you, young man, I don't need any of that, and went to slam the door in his face again. It's very hard selling things door to door. I did that once as a student. I was selling children's encyclopedias door to door just to try and make some money. Because my father was dead, my mother was poor, and had to make some money to pay for stuff. You know what happened? I sold one of those encyclopedias. I made a sale. And after that, I hardly slept the night. I felt so guilty. This was a couple of young parents just starting off. They just had a child about a year or two earlier. And I convinced these couple that it was just child abuse not to buy this amazing book. That if you didn't buy this book, you'd be setting back your children's education by so much that, you know, it's almost next to child abuse. If you didn't buy it, you know, you'd be really guilty for the rest of your life if you don't do the very best for your child. That was what I had to say. But I read some of that encyclopedia. In my opinion, it was rubbish. I was just saying really nasty stuff. But anyway, I had to do that to make a sale. I didn't believe in it. And I sold a copy. I felt so guilty about that. The next day I resigned, get another job. Because I felt so guilty. And I know that what happened many years later, sitting here, I told that story about guilt and how I thought, you know, why did I do that? Selling an encyclopedia I didn't believe in, you know, to this poor young family. And after my talk, this woman came up here, and I remember came up to me and said, Ajahn Brahm, what year was that? And I think I roughly knew the year, 1971, I think it was. It could be 70. I said, that's about the year. I remember as a young child, this man came to our door. He had big hair and a big beard. That's what I looked like when I was young. I had a big beard like Jimi Hendrix out here somewhere, and a lot big beard which went around here. It was called the donut look. So where the hair stopped, the beard began. It was really practical in England. It kept the whole of your body warm. You know, like a, didn't need a hat. My mother used to tell me, why didn't you get your hair cut? Why didn't you get your hair cut, son? And when I did get my hair cut, she said, that's not what I meant. But anyhow, She said that, yeah, this student with long hair and big beard, he came to our house and he sold his encyclopedia to us. And it was my favorite book. I loved that encyclopedia. And the coincidence was strange. Why was it? Would it be about that time? I think it probably was that little girl who now grew old and was come here to tell me that all the thing I felt was really bad actually meant a lot to her. I thought it was a terrible thing I did, but actually it was good for her. It was one of those other examples of the good, bad, who knows story. But anyway, this woman, she's about to shut the door in the student's face and she stopped. It was late afternoon, it was hot, and she said to the young man, I don't want to buy anything, but have you had anything to eat yet? He said, no, I've been working since the morning. Just wait for a few moments. And she went into her kitchen and she brought out a glass of milk and two biscuits, two cookies. Here you are, son, take these. Fast forward 30 years, it was that woman who got cancer, and when she opened up the bill from the hospital, she couldn't believe what she saw written on the bill. It wasn't hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was the doctor scrawling in his own handwriting, paid already 30 years ago with a glass of milk and two cookies. Thank you. He'd remembered the address. You never forget acts of kindness. They're always with you. And he remembered the address. That's why he took on the case. The woman hadn't moved. Stayed there all her life. And he checked the address. The same woman was there when he was young. He realized it was her. A woman, young woman, who didn't want to buy the goods of a door-to-door salesman, but still was compassionate enough to see a young man trying his very best to pay his way through medical school and was thirsty and tired and hungry. Just gave him a glass of milk and two cookies. He remembered, and now it was his turn to pay every cent of that medical bill himself, and to go so much further than any doctor would do, because it was for something more than just money. And I love that story, because that's what happens when people look after and help each other. They just go way beyond what other people do, out of gratitude. A little glass of milk and two cookies, a little cup of tea. Who knows what that will bring you back. So that's one of the nice things about fellowship, because I don't know why it is that some people always remember the bad stuff which happened, things which somebody did to you or things which were unfair. But that is what we let go of a new year. All the rubbish stuff, all the hurtful stuff, all the things which at the time, you know, you think weren't really necessary or were hard or were not helpful in your life. In my life, it always, whatever happens, you always learn from. It's always got something to do to help you. Something to do to assist, you know, your growth as a human being. There's no such thing as failure, it's just learning. We learn to do better next time. We learn from our mistakes. We grow from the tragedies of life. We have the opportunity to do better next time. This is actually what life is all about. So we don't feel bad about the past. So for goodness sake, don't take all the negativity of the past into the future. The negativity stops here. We do have a donation box in the back. You don't need to put coins and stuff in there. Put all your negativity in there before you go. Write it all down, all the terrible stuff that just happened to you. Bung it in the donation box and I'll look after it afterwards. In other words, let go of all the bad stuff of life. Remember all the wonderful stuff, the good stuff, the hopeful stuff, which which actually we can take forward into the future. So that way that it does give us incredible hope. And just coming here this evening, spending a wonderful time listening to a monk speak rather than listening to heavy metal, rap music, death metal, punk rock. This is monk rock. But anyway, listen to something which is a bit more inspiring is much more helpful. So especially this time, having a party, yes, it's good to have the fellowship and have happiness and fun, but it's also good to be reflective as well. A whole year has ended, new year begins. And there's always a chance, you know, to actually to reflect what's happened. And of course, ooh, so many years have gone past in this Buddhist society of Western Australia. So many years have gone past in Bodhinyana Monastery, in Dharmasara, in China Grove. So much things have happened. And you look back over all those years. Yeah, it's not been easy sometimes, but it was worth it. And sometimes you look back. If you're going to do it something different, would you have been able to? Would it have been any better? Which is why I always say, the past is ineffable. There's an English word called ineffable, which many people use. It's to describe ultimate reality. It's to describe the planes of final non-existence or existence, the ground of all being, the beginning and end of all things, that which is beyond the universe, the ineffable. Doesn't make any sense to me. Instead, I changed the word to ineffable. If something else had happened the past year, would it be better for you? If you hadn't invested in that Ponzi scheme, if you hadn't married that little tyrant, if you had not gone to that job but got another job, if you had have ordained as a nun rather than getting married, if you had, all those ifs are a total waste of time. Many, many times, my life could have gone in a totally different direction. And do I look back and say, oh, if I'd have done things differently, would I be any better? And I often look and say, no, no way. You know, many years ago, I got a proposal. A real proposal. I was a student. One of my best friends was getting married. And I went to the marriage ceremony. And after the ceremony, I was about 19 at the time. And 19 had the guys all standing around. And we started joking like young men do. And the joke was, who would be the next? And we pointed to one of our number, said, oh, Jeff, he'll probably be the next. And then we all said, nah, no girl would marry him. And then they pointed to me. My lay name was Peter. Ah, Peter, he'll be next. And they said the same. Ah, no girl would marry him. You know what I heard next? It was this young girl standing right next to me, and she whispered in my ear, I would. Oh, I'd never been so scared in my life. I was terrified. I didn't want to get married. I made sure I kept a long distance from that girl for a long time. There you have all this great fun in life. I'm sure she did much better than staying with a person like me who likes to live simple and likes to meditate all day and doesn't like to make money, likes to give it away. Then what woman would like to be with a guy like that? So anyway, say so we don't need anything. We can just live in a small caravan. Yeah, I want a house. Yeah, let's live a tent. No, I want a car. No, let's use bicycles. Nah. So anyway, I was a sort of very simple, loving monk, man at the time. I was a natural monk. Even in the snow in England, you know how cold it is in the snow. If you have never been to England, if you want to see the snow, experience the snow, when you go home after this event, go and sit in the refrigerator for half an hour. Then you know what it's like to be in England during the winter time. So anyway, if you want to see the snow, see it on YouTube. Much, much safer for your health. But anyway, there you were. The past is inevitable. What would have happened if the last year had been different? If you had made different choices? If other things would have happened to you in this life? What would life be like? And you can't tell, can you? There's no way of knowing if you turn left instead of right whether life would be any different. Because of that, the past is ineffable. Which means on New Year's Eve, we let it all go. We don't know what happened, why it happened. To me, okay, all done, all finished. Now we can look to see how we can make use of all the wonderful things which we have. And you know that sometimes when we look at the past, we always tend to look at the faults. I look at the wonderful things we've had in the past. Amazing, our Buddhist society. Oh, we just got the little house behind here. Well, that's one great thing we have. Oh, we've just learnt a lot as a committee. Oh, the Sangha has grown. I've grown. I always keep in touch with my Sangha. We've gone many, many places, many, many things we've achieved. Always look at the great stuff we've done, just like I hope that you will look at the wonderful things which has happened to you in the past. You may not be the best, but it's not that bad. It's pretty good. And as a result, you have this wonderful sense of gratitude and happiness that what life has given you. Now look, it's not sort of exaggerating, blowing your own trumpet, but many people here have come from far off places, Hong Kong and Malaysia, and even from Sri Lanka, they come here to visit, to do this New Year's Eve party and talking. I don't know many other temples who do this type of event. Maybe they do chanting and meditation and stuff, but not with a bit of fun and games, a bit of fellowship more than anything else. Friendship, associating with other good people. It's a wonderful way to spread a New Year's Eve. And it's a wonderful thing that, you know, we have the ability. I have all the support of these monks who are working really hard this afternoon. They're trying to set things up and trying to come up with some funny ideas, you know, for the New Year's Eve party. Funny ideas of actually the questions. Because I learn a lot when we have these questions. One of the questions we asked over there in the quiz was, who is the president of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia? And everyone said, me. That is not right. The president's over there. Can you stand up so you know who you are? That is the president, not me. So now you know. So I learned something. We need to actually the president of North Korea, he has a poster everywhere in the streets. So we should actually start all of the, you know, after Namo Tassa, hail to the president. Very funny, Jay. Anyway, so you do find out a lot about, you know, what's going on. When you ask questions, have a bit of fun, talk to people. You know, something which I've always been very concerned about is, you know, if you do become like a president or a spiritual director or an abbot, always to be able to make yourself available however much you can. Because sometimes if you sort of push people aside and get surrounded by protectors, yeah, you do have more rest. But also, you just, what's the point? What's the point of being a spiritual leader if you can't actually just associate, have fun and just relax, you know, with people you're supposed to be leading? Because I get a lot of feedback from you. Yeah, I love it when we have our retreats at Jhana Grove. During those retreats, I have the opportunity to have interviews. Yeah, I ask you questions, you tell me what's going on. I also learn from that. What works, what doesn't work. You know, how you're traveling as a meditator. What you're doing in your life. How much kindness is happening. Your kids. kids are great. They always tell me that your kids, they come here and it's amazing how much they learn. And how much, once they learned it, they used it to their advantage. Come on, says your kid to you. Come on, let go. I don't have to go to school so early. Let go. Oh, that little story of when I first gave the story about how to relax. Yeah, you don't get everything finished. So much stuff on my desk which I should do, but I'll do it tomorrow. Because I learned from this great monk, Buddhadasa, when he was building his hall, he stopped for the rains retreat, hit the monks' holidays, and when somebody came and said, when is your hall going to be finished? His answer was, it is finished. And there was no glass in the windows, no roof on the top of it, no doors in the holes, cement bags and rubbish all over the place. Are you going to leave it like this? To which he answered, sir, what's done is finished. And he went off to meditate. I love that little example. So that's what I sometimes do. So, you know, are you going to reply to that email yet? Send in the Bodhinyana Monastery report for the committee meeting. I don't think it's been sent in yet. Ah, it doesn't matter. What's done is finished. But when I said that, I got scolded by a Sri Lankan couple here on a Sunday. This is what happened. It was Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, and their 17-year-old boy was about to go out for the night for a party with his friends, and the daddy said, son, do you remember our agreement? You've got to finish your homework before you can go out to the party. Is your homework finished, son? And the son replied to the father, just as Ajahn Brahm said, Dad, what's done is finished. See you tomorrow. So it's amazing how kids can exploit what they hear here for their own advantage. But fair enough. But anyhow, at least they come here and they learn some very good teachings here. Teachings of, you know, how to be peaceful, how to get some happiness in their life so they can enjoy themselves, but also be really, really good kids. So many of the teachings here over these years, good ideas, good teachings which really help in this life. But on this particular occasion, I hope he doesn't mind, there's a young man I saw in Penang. Unfortunately, that 3 months ago, his father committed suicide. And in Penang, he got married to a Penang girl. He wasn't from Penang himself, shouldn't really say where he was from. But he said that he was always listening to me on YouTube. And after his father hanged himself, he wanted to hang himself as well. He wanted to commit suicide. And he said it was only just remembering these wonderful stories that this too will pass. In the depths of difficulties, depression, that we always think it's going to last forever. And it's that which creates a lot of negativity to us. Yeah, you may business be in trouble, health in trouble, monastery in trouble, I don't know what else is in trouble, whatever is in trouble. But you know it passes. And that's a beautiful thing. So that's what pulled him through. This too will pass. His depression, his negativity, his very deep grief that the father he loved and looked up to had committed suicide. And it did pass. And it did pass so much that he came specially to Penang when I was there to get a marriage blessing. And basically to say thank you. Know, for giving him teachings which actually save people's lives. This too will pass. Yeah, it doesn't matter how bad it feels or gets, it will never stay like that forever. It actually gets much better. You just hang in there, wait for a little while, and things change. And that is absolute truth. That's something which you can rely on. So because of that, you hear these incredible things here, which is not just having a party, It's actually having a wonderful time together, making new friends, listening to good Dhamma, not just Dhamma which is theoretical, but things which actually change your life, make you a better person, your kids better people, so you can face a very, what people say is a very difficult world, but I don't think it's a difficult world, it's a very adventurous world. And of course, on last Friday night, I gave a talk on the uncertainty of the future, and sometimes people say, we don't know what's going to happen, sort of in the future, 2018, what's going to happen? Look, I've been around so long that people thought, I remember that in the West we had all these bunkers built because we thought there was going to be a nuclear war between the Soviet Union and United States and under Ronald Reagan. And what happened? Nothing. And then Nostradamus, 1999, the world was going to end. And what happened? Nothing. And then what happened after that? 2010 or 11 or something, the next production idea that something was going to go wrong. 2000, Y2K, all the computers were going to go wrong. It was going to be the end of the world again. I don't know, people have promised the end of the world so often. Well, I say, Australia's saying, put up or shut up. World doesn't end, does it? It keeps on going round and round and round and round. That's the nature of samsara. It does change. And every little difficulty we have in life is there to learn from, is there to grow from. Without those tests in life, we would not grow. We would not learn. Yeah, it's tough at times. It's tough running a monastery. It's tough ordaining bhikkhunis. It's tough going around the world and trying to promote all these things. You know, it's all tough. You know, all the help which you give, all of our committee this last year are just really, just they work so hard behind the scenes. You don't know how hard it is to run a joint like this on a shoestring. Bodhinyana Monastery, we don't even have a shoestring. We wear sandals. Ha ha ha. Joke, we don't have a shoestring. Okay, I try my very hard just to make it laugh. But anyway. But we work really, really hard there. And, you know, it's worth it sometimes. Yeah, sometimes that people say, oh, why can't you do it better? But it's the best we can do. And because of that, you look at the energy, the willingness to help, the willingness to serve, the willingness to try new things, the willingness to be an adventure. Buddhism in the West is, you know, it's breaking new ground. And it always should be breaking new ground, just like the Buddha himself. You know, he did things which no one else had done before. Pushed it forward. You know, pushed the Dharma, taking away so much superstitions, taking away like the caste system, taking it away, just a person would be judged not by, you know, who their parents were or where they were born, but just how they behave. It doesn't matter what gender, what sexual orientation, what age, there was just no stigmatism at all. I love that when I first saw that, the lack of stigmatism. And that's what we're trying to have in our Buddhist world. You know, to have a community where everyone feels welcome. Doesn't matter who you are, you're welcome here. So because of that, that it's something which, yeah, there's always troubles and difficulties and bumps in the roads to Nibbana, but that's all part of the plan. Not the plan so much, that's all part of the road. So, looking at all of that, it's been well worthwhile. 2017 has been a really good year, as far as I'm concerned. I say that every year, whatever happens, it's always good. So, because we make it good, we choose to look at the best of it and to make sure it was a wonderful year. But we learn from it to make it grow even better next year. So we don't get angry at things, but we learn, find out how to make a better world. How to, for me, to serve monks, nuns, here, overseas, everybody, more efficiently. And it's wonderful to see what we can do. So, for me, 2018 looks like a really positive year. Who knows what's going to happen, but I never really want to know totally what's going to happen. Otherwise, it's like a spoiler, a book, knowing how the novel is going to end. That is no fun. So may 2018 be a lot of fun. Unexpected, but nothing which you cannot handle. That is why you've been born into this world. Difficulties, but you can handle them. So, I wish you all a very happy new year. Now, we're going to do a little bit of meditation.